We have three guest readers with us this evening. They've come all the way up from Limerick, all the way down from Limerick, to bring along their new book, The Revival Trio, which all three writers are in, and these books will be available for you to purchase at the end of the reading, and afterwards if you'd like. So I'd like to introduce the first of these. It's a poet by the name of Gerard Sheehy, who was born in Limerick and has lived there for most of his life. A regular reader at the White House Poetry Revival Nights on Wednesdays. His previous work has been published in the Microphone On anthology and in Revival, two of the Limerick poetry, main poetry publications. So please, could we have a warm welcome, please, for Mr. Gerard Sheehy.
It's very nice to be here anyway, right? And we'll give it a lash and see what happens. And I won't speak too much in between poems. But, okay, I'll start with a poem that I wrote about my father. It's called Flashback. At 60 miles an hour, I passed a place where I know my father played as a child, where he had lived and grown and unknown to him at the time, where I would one day follow. 60 miles an hour in a ditch between me and a river that doesn't seem to mind, that first it goes this way and then that, where the reeds rise past your waist and the trees of the wood behind are nature's sentinels to a child's imagination. A place where secretive creatures move and only betray their presence when you feel their eyes upon you, where as the wind caresses past you, you would swear you could hear a voice spoken in a language you only half understand. 60 miles an hour, and even in this momentary flash, I have seen more written about my father than I ever will on that tombstone I can hardly bear to look at. Thank you. I think I'll read two short poems about, about the way global warming and all this, right, is one thing, but the way the change is going on in the world and about the environment and stuff like that, a small bit of an idea about that. But one of them is called Motorway Murder. They lay there bleeding, sap all over the disheveled grass, their backs flayed in places, exposing wooden flesh to the afternoon sun. Confused branches reached like 100 desperate arms, and the felling had spilled sawdust guts everywhere. How long they had stood before their destruction, or how many generations of crows called them home, is unknown. But the tracks torn by machines told of the tarmac had them yet to come, and that memory of these trees might soon be gone. The other poem I wrote after we found out the lads in North Korea had the bomb, and I was thinking about it for a few days, and I saw an image, so I wrote this poem. It's called Nature, the Peace Protester. After news of the test came through, there appeared against a backdrop of perfect blue a cumulus explosion of cloud, loud only in its magnificence. In the immediate hush of its aftermath, not a single colour from the landscape was killed, nor river or human being evaporated, and as far as the eye could see, every building and every tree was still standing. By evening, the only fallout detected was rain. There's an uplifting poem called Limerick City Blues. As they often do this time of year, clouds the colour of tarmac atoms sail steadily up the estuary and unload their cargo of jungle thick rain all over the city streets. The sun is out of sorts because night holds court in its November kingdom. Dusk and dawn are twins of confusion, and the dead can be heard whispering at lonely, vulnerable moments. No, that's not really, sorry. I forgot it. Okay. The town is trapped by the hills that stalk it and can only watch as the dark, moody Shannon hurries past. All the talk is of society's maladies and how nobody is prescribing a cure, while everywhere more and more cracks invisibly appear and someone is falling silently through. That's the end of it. This is called Another Entrepreneur. His mother says nothing because the rent is paid and she always has enough to pass the evening in the pub. His father says nothing because of the distance there is between them. His brothers and sisters say nothing because they like the way that people notice them now. His girlfriend says nothing because she likes shiny things. Society says nothing because it has lost its voice. The flash car and no job says it all. This is called Yesterday's Man. He came towards me in a body that belonged in a morgue. A shroud of sweat matched his every move. And when I finally caught his attention, he eyed me as if suspicious he might owe me something. I tried to reassure him with some friendly words, and for a second I thought I recognised his smile. He even spoke of catching up sometime, but in the end, his addiction, although between us unspoken, wouldn't give him a minute, and the moment was broken. So some excuses, and a few steps later, we were worlds apart again. And I'll finish with this one. It's called Brother John. He speaks at times in tongues, and people do not know whether to listen, walk away, or just stay and nod politely in all the right places. You see, in his time, he has worn so many different faces, but now he professes nothing more fantastic than to be a son of God. A lot of people find that odd, others uneasy, that in these days of citizen self and people owning houses that will always have more bedrooms than children and two cars parked outside, that he should decide to speak of more important sounding things like respect your brother and sister, or try living life to the rhythm of angel wings. And all he does without judgment or pretense. All he does is appear suggestive as a question mark at the end of modern life's sentence. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sir Chair. Our next reader is Edward O'Dwyer, who is also from Limerick. He's been writing seriously since June 2006, which incidentally is the time he began going to the White House in Limerick. He holds a first-class honours degree in English and Media and Communications from the University of Limerick, and in September begins a HDIP in secondary school teaching here in Cork. He has been previously published in Revival. So could we have a warm welcome, please, for Edward O'Dwyer.
How's it going, everyone? Nice to be here. I could read from the book, but I'm going to read from this because there's more of it to hide behind. The first poem I'm going to read is based on a line from one of my favorite poets, a guy called James Fenton. And that line goes, "What belongs to wind and rain is out of danger from the storm." This poem is called End of the Storm. Remember how I used to tell you it was the storm, just the wind and the rain. Remember how I used to tell you it will all be over soon. Nothing to fear in here, I would say, thinking my gentle hand was the only awesome force in this world you should ever know. When you wake, I will be lost to the wind and rain, out of danger from the storm. Listen to it closely. I will tell you it will all be over soon. This next poem is about, very simply, it's about a broken home. It's called Home. Hollow throughout, now just a ghost of your former self. Eyes blackened up, long time that it is since the sun has looked happily in. Mouth that used to open up kindly for children, more closed now than ever. Maybe saddest of all, after the stroke that did it in the end, no eulogy of any kind, no mention even in the obituary pages, no remembrance at all of the heart that once pumped like a jackhammer inside that concrete chest. Something a bit more lighthearted now. This poem is called Meeting God for Pints. If any of you have a friend that's absolutely full of himself, I think you'll this will make sense to you. Meeting God for Pints. I'm meeting God for pints, but we should have been here 15 minutes ago. Fashionably late as always. As you might expect, God can be a little vain, a bit arrogant, a worship me and no other attitude. He's cancelled on me last two times we made plans, says he's been busy with work. Some short hours later, though, he's worked a miracle over two pints of the black stuff. Raising up his glass, I propose a toast, says God, familiar chipper in his voice, smile on his face. To forgiveness, he says, then a clink of glass from a slate wiped instantly clean turns two pints into many. Okay, this poem, sort of to bring you down a bit after that, it's kind of kind of sad. It's about a breakup. It's called Leafing. Tell me, how does it feel? But before you answer, think about that tree in the fields behind your parents' house where we used kiss when our feelings first sprung to bloom. Where we took a blunt knife, carved a crude heart together in the young bark. Where we inscribed each other's names on its clean insides. If you can see all this, then maybe you hear the sound of leaves rustling together in a tender breeze, sharing a rhythm, skin over skin and sinew for sinew. Keep going. Follow this thought, the vision, the sound. Follow until, ever so suddenly, I'm there with you, waiting in chill silence and shed leaves. And I'll ask you again, how does it feel? Does it feel like winter? Does it feel as though love's been stripped down around your heart? I know. I feel it too. Alright, I think I brought myself down with that one. This is a new poem, I wrote it in the last week, so it's the first time it's been read. I wanted to read something brand new for you. So this is called The Orange. At the breakfast table, I watch how you eat the orange. Every detail from the twirl you give its body on the edge of the knife, undoing a slice, the nip you make on the skin, straightening it for eating, to the drops of juice that bubble on your lips. At the breakfast table, as I watch how you eat the orange, I wish my eyes could follow the trail of vitamin C splashing down your gullet, follow round your body, in blood, into cell and organ. Wish I could see the mechanics, its work, where the rest of us go wrong, all the while certain there's a secret, and like the droplets you dribble on your chin, there's glimmers of revelation of two possible things. One, why God made fruit to the blueprint of the sun. and two, how your face shines so bright, I can't look directly into it. This next one's a bit lighter. Does anybody know a Paul Durkin poem where he compares his lover to a pint of Guinness? Why not? Oh, should it be a pint of Murphy's, actually? Sorry. But it was a pint of stout, I think, compared to. So this poem is called Simile. If a horticulturist may be a hawthorn tree gleaming with dew in early spring, and if an ornithologist, perhaps a golden eagle soaring against the backdrop of snowcaps, but an alcoholic, what to compare you to say you're like, pint-sized simile of what you mean to me. Champagne has sparkle, elegance, but I would only drink it if there was nothing else. I like a whiskey and a brandy, even a lager, but to drink in and taste your view makes me lick my lips, a slow, heavy lick, as if a creamy head has remained on them. Ah, yes, a pint of stout you are to me. This is a poem. A poem about sex, but written tastefully. It's called Perfect Jazz. Slow and delicate, prudence first in a tinkle of ivory fingers, like childhood practice, the eager nerve of touching reawakened when a metronome pounded above the note. But fingering then a chord of the brimming tune, a firm strum, another, and another, the full broad chest now throbbing with anticipation of rhythm's first beat. Building toward perfect jazz, as in it breaks, remaining only the burst of the sax upon the jam, free, mysterious as love, primal in stroke, thrilling the most soundless hideouts and surrendered ears. It's a very short poem called Autumn. The summer and winter, eyeing each other up violently, autumn's a tense time, uncertain time. Leaves on trees dwindling, remaining birds singing only half-hearted songs. The grey-blue grapple of daytime sky. Just a blink to tip the scale. Colder now suddenly. Congested grumbles in the clouds. Rain starting to flop. It's happened as we knew it. But in November, the odd wasp or butterfly comes indoors. Reminders, the honey and nectar of summer's veins has not frozen deathly solid. This poem, I'm just going to show you a picture first. We all saw loads of images from the Lebanon crisis, and they were all shocking in their own right, but this is one that stood out to me. I don't know how well you'll be able to see it back there. You can see it alright, but anyway, it's a man carrying his dying child through the street, and this poem is based on that picture. It's called God's Children. The newspaper headline read, "They looked as though they were sleeping, but that man, your father, his mouth strained wide open, is not singing a lullaby. Your hand groping limp at the air is not petting a dog's head in some childish dream. There's a reality here, working in the simplest of ways, without mystery. Dark will touch this street gently, like a door softly closing on an unlit room. At this moment, the sky is blue. Beautiful, isn't it? Looking as though in it must be a God who loves us, would never drop a bomb on his children. I think this one to finish off. I'm going to let you guess who the person in this poem is, but if I don't tell you right now, then you're all going to think that it is. This is not a homosexual poem. you're all going to think it is if I don't tell you that. But yeah, I'm going to let you guess who it is, and if somebody guessed correctly, I might buy them a pint. Alright, I will. So this is called An Attraction. He has a margarita coiled up in slight, long fingers, which I'm sure are smooth as alabaster, looking this way from his stool at the bar. He dresses well. Collar, suede jacket, nicely cut jeans, collar shirt, matching brown flats. His hair, a la Samson, curls in locks, sandy, gold-specked, flows in the conditioned air. He smiles a toothy smile, patrician eyebrows arching upward at the centers, hinting mischief in his mood, his thoughts, the kind you choose to trust over any good advices. He is different from the reputation that circles about him, those long, gossiping tongues, sharp and slanted. I heard he wore nothing but black. I heard he was pale and skinny, but he's neither. I heard his eyes were chill as winter. Quite the opposite, really. Oh, but what if he comes over here? Oh, God. If he comes this way, I think I'd hit the floor. You're not allowed to answer because you know who it is. Does anybody know?
Barney.
Barney.
Hemingway?
You're not the first person to say that, actually. No, it's not Barney. It could be, but it's not.
May I have an answer?
No. You're getting closer, though.
Michael Jackson.
No.
Hemingway?
No, if anybody knows, they can come over and say it to me.
Thank you for that, Edward. Our next guest poet is Mr. Noel Harrington. Noel is from Trumgrainy in County Clare. In his 20s, he did the customary living abroad thing in Copenhagen, Munich, New York, etc., and has washed more than his fair share of dishes. In his final year, studying for a BA at Maynooth, he won the university's top award for literature, the Barbara Haley Memorial Prize, has had work published in Revival, and will be appearing in a future issue of The Stinging Fly. So please could we welcome Mr. Noel Harrington.
Thank you very much. A few years ago, for my sins, I worked as a secondary school teacher. And if you want to reflect on your job, I guess you think about teenagers, since that's who you're dealing with every day. This is called, humble chap that I am, Apology to Teenagers. I'm sorry for what you will become. Old, slow, judgmental and jealous. Regretful of what you didn't achieve, experiment with, venture out into. Or worse still, spiteful of those who did. You will put on weight, you will lose hair, you will count the money in your wallet, purse, bank account, or pension fund. You will be scared to stay up late, lest you find it difficult to rise in the morning and get to work hindered by the headache of living. You will learn to despair of teenagers, their noise, their fashion, their antisocial behavior, and worst of all, their idealism. You will especially forget that teenagers view life differently to adults, and you will, of course, conclude that their view is not a valid one, while yours is the only one. You will laugh at their love affairs, condemn their sexuality, mock their music, judge their covers. You will denounce their actions and decry their apathy. You will suspect their integrity. You will moralize their morals. In short, you will become an adult. Thank you. I'm not too close to the mic, am I? It's very hard to judge the... Am I too close to the mic?
Yes.
You can everyone hear? A little bit. Okay. I have a loud voice. This is a not a loud poem. It's called Crush. Set in that most ubiquitous of Irish places now, the petrol station forecourt, well known for budding romance. Crush. Her smile steals through the diesel haze, the curves of her body watched wavering. He puts in more than he meant to as she bounces into the shop. Wasted drops of fuel drip to his boots as he fumbles the pump back into place. He walks heavily, pulling notes from his pocket. She glides down another aisle with three more hellos. He sees her in the rounded mirror as she chooses foreign cheeses. A voice disturbs their evening, the till girl saying, "Next." He leaves with an ache beyond understanding. Not her hair, nor her body, nor her smile it was that made him feel she was for him. It was a tragedy of the long, slow-burning kind. Thank you. The longest poem I ever wrote took me 7 years. I thought of the title, 2 years later I started it, and about 3 or 4 years later I got around to finishing it. But don't worry, I'm not going to read it all tonight. It's about 5 pages long. And it's called For Quiver, Whenever I May See Her Next. And it's woven around the theme of the fact that this girl was into Simon and Garfunkel and beautiful things and singing in her girl group and all that sort of thing. And I was into heavy metal. It's a prose poem, so you have to hang in there. And I was a heavy metal kid. Guitar was noise, was power, was prayer and cry. Guitar was anger in defeat, was defiance of God and man. Guitar was testosterone talking, violent singing, and in the hands of Richie Blackmore was soul silhouetted on electric feedback wall of black speaker sound. Guitar was tears dealt with. Guitar was clarity, focus, dreams explained, and the future cranked beyond belief. Guitar was the cross on which I hung for no one's sins but my own. Guitar was a sermon from the hip. Guitar was a cherry red double-bodied slimline electric. Guitar was a lover, a unity of friends. And to know heavy metal was to understand. Thank you. This is another prose one. If English is not your first language, I hope you can hang with it. Not too many full stops, commas, things like that. It's called Girls, so you can guess what it's about. It's actually, it's not in the book, it's in my next book. It's a micro chapter in the novel that I'm writing these past 4 years. What was there of a night but the shape of a smile through falling fair hair, and the softness of laughter at gentle jokes? The looking at lips with the thoughts of a kiss, but no push to get him closer. What was there of a night but the dreams of a girl who'd put her arm around him with the comfort of touch, who'd allow him see her looking at his mouth with desire afire in her eyes? And what was there of a night but the looking around at all the girls in the world, the slim ones, the tall ones, the curvy ones, the small ones, as they swept by to the bar, to the dance floor, to each other, to all the other young men with lines to deliver and a role to play. night after night, as they say, for these youthful days full of the promise of night. A constant run of night, gathered in the pub, in from the whipping wind of wintered London, the gales of Galway, the straight falling rain and seething cold of Maynooth. Or looking through the brightness of summer freedom, in a beer garden, on city streets, having the crack with one eye on your friends and the ostensible being, the other sweeping for a pretty face, a flash of teeth, a shine in an eye, a whirl of hair, a fall of breast, a glorious handful of ass, to set the mind off on its run, its dreamscape of her eyes closing, for to feel a kiss, every wet touch of lip, every lick of tongues entangled, spreading the pleasure, softening the veins, the bones, the skull, till the whole body explodes and burns with fulfillment, with a reason to be, with a feeling that this is what it's all about, the mystery of life, the meaning of life, the living at our fullest, of reaching our potential, of grasping the richest, finest moments there are, and hitting the high notes, the right notes, the long notes of human warmth and love and fun and sharing. And Christopher dreams his dreams of a soft-voiced girl with eyes that smile and understand and a body that welcomes and knows what it needs. Every night he goes out with the lads or with the girls, with couples, it's always the same. He dreams his dreams of a lover who laughs, a lover who soothes, a lover who stays. And every night he goes to bed alone, having spent a great deal of the night alone within the crowd, a dialogue in his head from the theatre macabre. Our Christopher imprisoned by an invisible force that stays his hand, his tongue, his smile. And watching while all around him the young do what they do, they flirt, they dance, they move beyond thought and into the physical, they leave behind words and their meaning, they deal in kisses and touch and they plain old get it on. And at night's end, Christopher leaves and is relieved to do so, to go with his friends and talk into the night and have the crack away from the scene, the pressure, the girls who appear inches from his face and say things like, you could have a nice smile, you should try it sometime. Away into the night with you, Christopher, away from this hard road, this impossible struggle, this battle you are doomed to lose. Get yourself away from the beauty and the torment of the girls. Thank you. These once were in order, but... Very, very short poem to follow that. Each verse is only two lines long. See? Okay. I wrote it one February. I work in an office and alone, and it started snowing out of the blue, and I stood up at the windowsill and wrote this to my wife. Stop a while, come look at the snow as it falls in meanders from molten sky. Breathe in, rest your hand in mine as we marvel at innocence come visit us. Lose yourself in the myriad team, or pick a flake, watch it float all the way down. Dream a childhood ripple of miracle, as inadequate shoes tramp proud in the white. Look to that child, a short-haired girl, her hope a stubborn flake as all around melts. Let her play. Thank you. Whenever someone comes to the White House and they spend half their time flicking through the pages, I think, Jesus, you should get yourself a bit more organized. So there's a lesson for me. I'm going to finish with this one. It's another prose poem set in the teenage disco, specifically the Irish rural teenage disco of the late 1980s. No worse a place I could ever imagine returning to. It's named after a song, a heavy metal song by Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine. Sweet child of mine blaring as legends of rock stardom explode the music, filling your head with wisps of cash and glory and being the one to make it. This swirling around in boozed up secret brain thoughts as you throw your now self around in a frenzy of sex hope, swaggering intimations of violence, desperate friendship defining laughter, your eyes sweeping, locked furtively on the one, that girl, that beautiful, impossible girl with flailing hair, maddening curve of breast, taunting, perfect thigh, crushing smile and eyes reeking devastation for lack of recognition. That girl of nightly visits of softly saying, come with me, see her lips form perfectly to say, come with me. To music-filled heaven of drum beats, body thrust, salt and tears, and that look in her eyes as she says, yes, God, yes, please do. Speaking love, admiration, and Darwinian selection, ending with mess of aloneness and mockery recrimination. But again and again and here on dance floor, you look in dreams and place yourself where she has to see, but dare not reveal yourself, for fear of intensity rejected or worse laughed at, latest gossip victim, and despair consumes as older male stakes his claim, and her hand climbs his shoulder to back of neck, and long, thin, ringed fingers play with hair's end and choke you with their sensuous treachery. There is nothing so ugly and beauty wasted. And you imagine their conversations revolving around him and his elevated place in the world, with gorgeous girlfriend on arm, at games and corridors waiting for skipped class to end, and wonder how long before she tires of tall, handsome inanity and comes to look for the rough diamond of waiting you. And your best friend slaps hard on the back in gesture of I know, as they walk away into the shadows of bliss and torment, and you turn to head-banging friends and scream your frustration and sure, who cares? And electric guitar wail twists your heart in tortuous, distorted depiction of night's events, and drum beats, cymbals crash, the pain of your life, the powerlessness and pointlessness, and you leap on closest back and swing your head to guitar riffs the brain forgets. It just holds on for dearest life, and a smile breaks, and friend's energy lifts, and music pounds and calms your faltering heart, and you dance, and you laugh, and you leave sorrow for the morning. Thank you very much.